members of the committee, who are the hosts. We want to welcome the chairpersons of provincial portfolio committees, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, Nenkosi Lapho Mandlala, ngokuba khona kwakhe. Samkele futhi nomama lapha waseGauteng, uhlala waseGauteng, uchairperson waseGauteng. We had invited all chairpersons, in fact, from various provinces to be with us. The apology that we get was from the Free State only. Maybe others are still lost here in Parliament. This is a big institution. It employs over 1,000 people. It's quite big. You know, it's a factory. But the factory that produces laws and passes money. And also want to welcome the Department of Provincial and Local Government and say that Baba Professor Sobahle, we had agreed no more that this meeting is not going to go ahead if the political leadership is not here. That is the minister or the deputy. Because he had forgotten to say, no, the meeting, if the leadership is not here, must not go ahead. Now, it means that he let you, a professor, off the hook. Because when I talked to him, he says, no, they said they'll come when when we consider the final mandate. I said, no, that's not the case. The first thing, when we start, hear the politics of the law. Secondly, we have taken a decision, Prof, which I think you must convey to the department and the officials, that we want ministers to come on three things. At least, you know, that's the minimum. When you come with a law, introduce a law in parliament, it must be led by a political leader to come and talk about the politics of the law. The second thing is that when you come and present a budget, because a budget is a translation of your ideas, your policies, your programs into reality, you come and talk to it. The third one is when you deal with the annual report, that must be led politically. You know, I don't think it's too much to ask for those three things to be done when they are led by the politicians. Now, I think that must be conveyed, because it will be a way to go when we deal with these matters. That's why I'm saying then, let me express that and say that Mr. Maneli here saved the day, Prof. Yeah, he saved the day. Then let's agree then that the department is here to talk to us on the bills, the two bills that are dealing with big people who are indigenous people, our leadership that is indigenous, very important, because the new democratic, the new systems are new to us, the systems of democracy, of elections. It was known that leadership is, you are born a leader. Therefore, it is moved from person to person without any undergoing of a democratic process. But then we're trying to match the two to say how can they live together, given the development of society and so on. We're having the first briefing today. And the reason that we requested provinces to come is very simple. Is that this is Section 76 bill. It will require us to engage. We would want provinces, when we go to their own areas, to understand this thing from the inception, not to get it at the tail end when you are briefed yourself, but from the beginning you understand it and so on. You can articulate it in a way that has to be articulated by all of us. That is the intention. It means we'll walk through with yourselves if you so wish. In relation to dealing with this thing. And also, Professor Hadikare, I mean, advocate at the Kare. I'm giving you a higher status now because you're opposite my professor. So much, let me say. He was at that level. Let's allow you then. The apology was only that apology that we have heard of Free State Chairperson. But other than that, there's no apology that we have. Let's allow then Prof to talk to us on the bill. Prof, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members. First of all, let us greet you all with all the respect that we can master. Secondly, let us thank you, honorable members, through you, Chairperson, for affording us this opportunity to present to you the two bills. Really appreciate the honor that you bestowed on us in this respect. Thirdly, let us thank you for making this leeway of allowing us to make these presentations in the absence of our political principals. If you really had, you had insisted on this, would have been in a quandary because they are not here. So we really appreciate that you allow us to do so. Fourthly, allow me to make a request that I'm going to make a presentation on the National House and bill, and then the Framework Act bill. I'm going to ask one of my colleagues to make a presentation. In this instance, Nathi Mbongosa. With those few words, Chairperson, allow me then to make the presentation, and I hope that all the honorable members have the copies of these presentations in front of them. On page 2, and you know that the presentations there are about two bills, the National House and House of Tanzania's bill, as well as Leadership and Governance Framework Amendment Bill. And as I've said, I'm going to make a presentation on the National House Bill. Page 2, then, we look at the structure, the background, in fact, and this is on page 3. Allow me to say this, Chairperson, honorable members, that this bill, National House of Transnational Leaders Act, was passed in 1994 to be in line with the then interim constitution of 1993. It was repealed in 1997, replaced with a new act, which was again amended, which was amended in 1998 as well as in 2000. At the same time, we had the white paper on transnational leadership and governance, which was adopted in 2003, and this led to the passing of the act later on, late in the year, in 2003. If you look at those two, you will find then that the National House of Transnational Leaders Bill is then not in line with the white paper. White paper which maps out the vision of government and how these issues must unfold. So it was imperative then that at some time there has to be these amendments so that what is contained in the National House of Transnational Leaders Act is reflected in the policy document, which is a white paper, and that's what we are doing now. So this bill replaces and comes up clean slate of things here, incorporating issues that are found in the white paper of 2003. Because that is the policy document. Remember, the bill, the National House Act, preceded the white paper. So we had to have this alignment now. Then I have to go through the process because this is the second process, Chairperson and other members, that we started off at with the portfolio committee. So I'm saying then that on page 4, bills were approved by cabinet for tabling in parliament on the 20th of May this year. Bills were published for comment in June. I'm just taking through that, the process of to be why we're here now. And the closing date was on July 2nd, 2008. Bills were introduced in the parliament, that is, both houses, early in June. Then the department conducted consultations with some key stakeholders here, that is, queens, kings, senators, headmen, women, national provincial houses, Sarel Commission, or commission with a long name, Commission on Traditional Leadership and Disputes and Claims, the so-called Tabo Commission, SALGA, and provincial government. Then, after that, the Political Committee on Provincial and Local Government opened a public comment. So they gave way, they enabled public to make comments. They held public hearings. And then comments were considered and amended. Amendments were effected. Then, subsequent to that, the National House passed the two bills in August, this year, 20th of August. Now, what does this bill contain on the National House of Traditional Leaders? The bill on page 5, Chairperson or I remember, provides for the following key areas. The preamble, capturing the history of the National House of Traditional Leaders, so that it is able to demonstrate that work was done before. Secondly, provide for the establishment of National House Traditional Leaders. There, within that, we are saying that 3 members must be elected from each provincial house. Recall, Chairperson and honorable members, that previously these 3 members were nominated by each province. They were saying they must be elected, bringing in a democratic element here. We also make a special provision for a situation where a province does not have a provincial house of traditional leaders, like, for instance, Gauteng. We also, in the legislation, talk about that the term of office continues to be 5 years for this house. We also deal with the membership here, that it must be restricted to senior traditional leaders. Where there are good reasons to have people other than senators and like headmen representing the province, then that should be allowed. Next, the election of members to the House by provinces. Then we're providing for a role of the minister as well as the premier to play a role there. Minimal role, not interfering with the election. Minimal role, the administrative role, where they notify the houses to call prepare for the election, and they receive the name. And I want to stress this, that there is no untoward interference by politicians in this process, except to make sure that the process continues smoothly and is transparent. Then, the use of secret ballot, observations by officials of the House as well as the Department, these must be observers when these processes take place. After the election of the three members by each province, then three members will designate one of them to be leader of that delegation to the National House. With your permission, Chairperson, continue to deal with the duties and powers of the House on page 6. And we are saying, we are aligning this with what is obtained in the White Paper as well as in the Framework Act. And we are saying there should be harmonious working relations between the National House and the Provincial Houses to promote, for instance, role of leadership, tribal leadership, nation building, peace, cohesiveness, social well-being and welfare of the communities, socio-economic development, and service delivery within these communities. That cooperation between the houses, the National House and the Provincial Houses, must be enhanced. They also have to consider parliamentary bills referred to them by this body, that is by Parliament. That is in terms of Section 18 of the Framework Act. That this House must advise and make recommendations to government relating to, for instance, policy, legislation, customary law, partnerships with government, in development, service delivery, programs geared towards development of rural communities, international and national issues. As you can see, these issues were not there in the old National House of Transitional Leaders Act. But these issues are reflected very, very, very clearly in the White Paper on Transitional Leadership and Governance. Because, as I said, that document is a policy document. And so what is reflected in that document must also be reflected in the National House of Transitional Leaders Act, hence this alignment. So all these duties now are an attempt to make sure that not only there is an alignment between the policy document and legislation, but also that this House must not just be a talking shop, but must have teeth and powers, duties and functions that and make it work and make a worthwhile contribution in the development of our people, especially in the rural area. This House must be consulted on national government issues with respect to development of traditional communities. It must participate in the national initiatives to monitor, review, evaluate programs in rural communities, and these issues are already mentioned in the Framework Act. It must perform tasks determined by members, by any member of the national cabinet, or as provided for in the national legislation. Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, on page 7, we are dealing now, if you go back again, the relationship between the House, the Kings, and Queens. As I keep saying, all these were not there in the old National House of Transitional Leaders Act. We are saying and we are proposing that the House must on a quarterly basis hold meetings with kings and queens in the country to discuss the following: activities, programs of the House, matters relating to service delivery and the development of the rural communities, and any other business agreed upon or agreed to by either party. Again, if you can see, if you can look at this, you will see then that because kings and queens are not members of local houses and sometimes provincial houses, but we felt then that there must be a mechanism that will allow this interaction between kings, queens, and the national house. For a similar reason that, as you know, honorable members, national house interacts with the president as well as the national department. National house gets delegated powers, delegated duties, and delegated functions by the president. Then that house must be able then to interact and inform the kings and queens about these deliberations, so that the queens and queens get to know firsthand what the government is interested in. The queens and kings don't just get this information from members of the National House who are delegates from the provinces, but they must be able to interact with the chairperson, deputy chairperson of the National House, to have these relationships so that they know where the country is going. That is the idea, that the queens and queens must be on an equal footing with members of the National House, and they must know the thinking by the president as well as the national government, or all the spheres of government, what is now, what should be happening, what is of cardinal importance for the country as a whole. Chairperson, honorable chairperson, deputy chair, and honorable member, I now talk to relationship between the House and government in terms of accountability, because this House must also, because it is using taxpayers' money, be seen, not just be accountable, but be seen to be accountable. And we are saying on an annual basis, it must submit a report to Parliament accounting on its activities and programs. Parliament may request to meet with the House to discuss matters of interest to Parliament. And I believe that has happened already. And we are putting here in the legislation that must happen, so that they know that they are accountable to the lawmakers of the land for the finances and the funds that they get from our people through the lawmakers. Annual official opening of the House by the President or a person designated by the President. We're also making a provision for the relationship between the House now and the provincial houses, because at the moment, honorable chairperson and deputy chair and honorable members, there isn't that really official relationship that one can talk about. And there has been one of the major complaints from the National House that with respect to the houses, the National House does one thing and provincial houses don't feel duty bound to listen, to be guided, to be assisted by the National House. And we are making this provision that these houses must work together. So we are saying the House must have clearly define the relationship with the provincial houses for supervision, for monitoring purposes, accountability, and alignment, e.g., investigate matters referred to it by provincial houses and make recommendations. It must not just be a helpless, hapless body while things are happening in the provincial sector. It must advise provincial houses regarding the administration of their affairs, where it sees that something is not going right. On an annual basis, hold meetings with the provincial houses, discussing matters relating to traditional communities. in consultation with the provincial house, interact with the local house as a national house. When it wants to interact with the local house, it must go through the provincial house, even for protocol purposes. Chairperson of the national house may establish a body of chairpersons of the provincial houses and interact with these people on a regular basis on issues of common and mutual interest. Likewise, we are saying the secretary of the national house may establish a similar body of secretaries of provincial houses for the same purpose. And as I've said, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson and members, that we are trying to formalize this relationship to make sure that the houses as a whole work together, that the National House as a senior body has this monitoring, supervisory role on the issues that take place down there in the provinces. That when there are issues, that government, especially at national level, the president, is not happy about down there in the provinces. There is this interaction then that must take place there, with the National House conveying the sentiments of national government as well as the sentiments of the province down to the province, provincial legislation. On page 9, we are talking about the administration of the House. That the minister, with the approval of the House, must appoint the secretary to the House. This is already happening. The minister, with the approval of the House, second staff member to assist the secretary to discharge his work. This is already happening. Then we come to the responsibilities of the House, which are reflected in clause 13, that they must keep records. Financial statements audited, they must enforce code of conduct, they must establish relationships and facilitate cooperation between itself and provincial houses, as well as between provincial houses themselves. They must promote this equitable, fair, non-discriminatory and supportive environment for the house and for all provincial houses. Assign clear responsibilities to the secretary of the House, hold the secretary responsible for overall performance and administration of the House. They must involve the secretary in decision imparting on the overall management of the House. This must not just be on a random basis. They must know that this must happen regularly and is formalized. On page 10, we're proposing support to the House by government, which is reflected in clause 16. National government to adopt legislation and other measures to support the House to fulfill its functions. This is also reflected in the Framework Act, because these houses must not be seen to be talking shops and dummy bodies. They must be seen to be having teeth where serious business must take place. Government must support. This support must also include provision of infrastructure, finances, human resource, skills development programs, and other administrative processes. This has been started by DPLG tentatively. And we are saying this must be formalized, and it must happen in a very big way if we want to make sure that this important body plays its rightful role within the cooperative spirit of governance here. Honorable Chairperson, status of members, which is referred in clause 10, and we are formalizing it to say the chairperson and deputy chairperson are full-time. That the president, on the other hand, has power to determine, after consulting the House, whether there is a need for other members of the House to be full-time. At the moment, only the chairperson chairperson are full time. But there is room for the president, after consulting the House, to increase this number of full time members. The bill also, Honorable Chairperson, provides for following general issues which are not fully discussed in the presentation. The qualifications, disqualification of members, how they qualify, how they can be disqualified. The vacation and filling, how vacations and the filling of posts can take place. Where the sittings of the House, where the meetings are conducted. How to elect a chairperson and deputy chairperson, the privileges and immunities of the members, that they must talk freely like members of parliament without looking over their shoulders, especially when they are discussing these issues in the houses, so that they are immune from attacks. They must feel free to discuss these issues.
Prof, I see Honorable Nseke looking at you very seriously. When you talk about this point.
No, sir. With respect, no, sir. We also talk about the remuneration, that they, how they must be remunerated as part of the, public office bearers, their benefits. Then we're also talking about rules and orders and committees of the House. On page 12, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, where also the bill also provides for the dissolution in the House. What happens in the interim period? Well, that was a worry for some members, that when at the end of the term of the House, what happens? But also about the clause that is that they can continue to be members while the processes are taking place. The oath of the office, code of conduct, the judicial powers of the minister, repeal of laws, and transitional matters. With your permission, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, I have come to the end of presentation. As we have indicated, the clauses where these amendments have been effected are reflected in the document. And as I've said, these are the issues that the amendments deal with. In order, as I've said, to achieve two things, to align this House with its sister houses. Secondly, to align this House with the provisions as enunciated in the policy document, that is, the white paper on traditional leadership, which maps out the vision of government on the institution. So that a lot of these things that we have been mentioned here, Honorable Members, did not come from the top of the head of the officials of the department. Most of these issues have been captured from the white paper, as instructed by the white paper, so that this House is able to discharge its responsibility and its mandate, as envisaged by government, as well as the ruling party. With those words, Chairperson, I thank you, and I again respectfully ask you to allow me to call upon my colleague to continue to make the rest of the presentation on the Framework Act. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I think we've heard. We must welcome Baba Smithler from the Northern Cape. They are traditional communities, Lapo Mak Akrikwas. Therefore, you are in line for being here. the leader in the Northern Cape. We appreciate the fact that you are here with us. Then let's allow the department to continue on the other leg of the bill, because these things, they go hand in hand, they go together. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair, honorable members, traditional leaders present, and colleagues. If we go back to slide number 3, just a brief background also of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. I think we all remember that it was passed in 2003, just after the white paper was adopted, the white paper on traditional leadership. It was adopted in July, and then in December, the Act was passed. Immediately after the Act was passed, provinces also followed suit with their own provincial legislation, which is in line with the white paper as well as with the Framework Act. Now, in the last 3 years, during the implementation of the new legislation on traditional leadership, we've identified quite a few issues that we need to refine the legal framework governing the institution of traditional leadership. That is why we are here where we are today with the amendments on the current Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act. There were many other issues that we identified also from provinces that actually necessitated the whole process of amending the legislation, which is why we're here today. If we continue, Chair, to slide number 13, that's where the presentation continues. The amendment to the Act contains the following key issues as we are going to go through them in detail. The issue of the membership of the kingship-queenship councils that we are establishing in terms of the bill. The membership also of the traditional councils that are already in place in terms of the Act. There is a restriction currently to say that they can only have 30 members. Now, the bill currently contains a clause that says there has to be a formula to determine that instead of the restriction to 30. The other issue we're covering is the issue of the recognition of the entities as kingships or queenships and the establishment of councils for those entities. We also provide for their functions. We also provide for the provision of the establishment of traditional sub-councils. We are going to deal with that in detail in the presentation. We also deal with the appointment of persons to act as kings or queens in the interim, as an interim measure, while the Commission on Traditional Leadership Disputes and Claims is finalizing the investigations and determinations. So that is basically what the bill is about. But Chair, allow me to go through the issues in detail, so that we can just look at them in detail. Like I've indicated, Chair, the very first issue that we are dealing with in the bill, the gap or the challenge that we identified was that there is no provision currently in the legislation for the recognition of kingships or queenships in the legislation. The Act only recognizes an individual, a king or a queen, without an entity, the community of the king, and without also establishing a council to work with the king. The Act already provides for regulations to be issued by the president to determine the role of the king and queen, in addition to their customary functions and roles that they are already performing. So we thought this was a gap, and then we said we need therefore to provide for the establishment or the recognition of a kingship or a queenship as an entity, as well as the establishment of a council to work with the king or queen with the accompanying functions and duties for these councils. The other issue that we cover, Chairperson, if you go to slide 16, right on top, is the issue which is quite prevalent, I think, in the Northern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and some parts of Northwest, where you find that one community has got areas, geographical areas, you know, located in different sort of areas, but they are one and the same community. And I think currently there is a difficulty in terms of administering these communities. So the bill proposes that a sub-council be established for the other areas which are outside of the main area where the traditional leader is located or where he resides. So there's a smaller council that is going to be now, in terms of the bill, be established in the other jurisdictional area of a community. The other issue, Chair, that we are covering in the bill, we are amending Section 17 of the Act, because through the implementation, people have said it's a bit ambiguous. It's not clear how it's going to be implemented. So it's just a matter of making some textual amendments to make sure that it's clear enough what it refers to in terms of the membership of local houses at district levels. So it's just a textual amendment on that one. The other issue also, Chair, still on slide 16, is there is no provision currently for the appointment of a person to act as a king or a queen as an interim measure, where a paramount chief, you'll remember that kings and queens, in terms of the old order legislation, are referred to as paramount chiefs, because nobody at the time in the olden days could be called a king or a queen for reasons, I think, which are obvious. So there is no provision currently in the Act to appoint anyone in case a paramount chief passes on, to appoint anyone as a paramount chief or a king. I mean, you will remember that we are in a transitional phase. The new Act provides for kings and queens, while the old legislation provided for paramount chiefs. The Commission on Traditional Leadership and Disputes and Claims is currently finalizing the issue of determining who is actually a king or a queen. So what has happened in the meantime is that in the Eastern Cape, one king has passed on, and there was no legal mechanism to appoint anybody in his place. Also in Mpumalanga it happened, so there is a legal vacuum there. So that is what we are trying to address with this particular clause. So the bill, therefore, provides for a person to be appointed to act as a paramount chief while the commission is finalizing its work around these issues. Also, we are providing for a legal mechanism, for the paramountcies or the paramount communities and the paramount chiefs to also be withdrawn. I mean, the recognition of those entities to be withdrawn, and those persons, because now the recognition is going to be for a kingship or a queenship, as well as a king and a queen. So that is the other clause that we are making provision for, Chairperson. On slide 17, Chair, the other issue which has troubled, I think, all provinces, when the Act was passed in 2003 and implemented in 2004, government was given 1 year within which in provinces to pass provincial legislation, as well as to transform the traditional authorities into the new style traditional councils. Unfortunately, that did not happen in most provinces. Some provinces made efforts to try to comply with the 1 year period, but sadly, I mean, I can say the whole country was not able to do this particular work within 1 year. So the provision in the bill right now is to extend that period and make it a 5 year period instead of 1 year period. Now, if we look at the time where we are right now, if this bill goes through this year, we'll only have just over a year for provinces to finalize this process. because the amendment will be with a retrospective effect, which means it will start in 2004 already. And if you count from 2004 September, 5 years will end in September next year. So we will only have about 12 months from today to finalize the process. I mean from the 24th to finalize that process. We are confident that if the bill goes through this year, the provinces will have that enough time to finalize the process so that the transformation that is envisaged can happen and be finalized. The other issue, Chair, that we are covering, still on slide 17 in the middle, is the issue where the Act currently says the community authorities must be done away with, must be disestablished, and the Commission is also going to be looking at that issue. But there is no mechanism to say, while they are still there, how do you then administer them? So the issue there is to say that they must continue to be administered because they are existing entities. You can't create a legal vacuum. So we're saying they must continue to be administered until the Commission has made its determinations around their status. The other issue, still on slide 17 at the end, is the issue where currently there is no provision that senior traditional leaders are ex-officio members and chairpersons of traditional councils. And in some areas already there have been questions to say, you know, the council can just elect anybody to be a chairperson of a traditional council. And since this is, you know, a traditional structure, a traditional leader has always been the chairperson of his council in his area. So to eliminate that kind of conflict that has existed in some areas, the bill provides that a senior traditional leader or a hosi, inkosi, hosi, is a chairperson of the traditional council. By virtue of him being a traditional leader, he's the chairperson of the traditional council. And the term of office of traditional council chairperson is 5 years, and it's aligned with the term of office of the National House of Traditional Leaders, which Prof was presenting about earlier. So that is the provision, Chair, on slide 17. Slide 18, Chair, we also want to clarify the issue of the membership of the traditional council. You will remember that in terms of the Act currently, the traditional councils, they consist of the 60% of members who are selected by the traditional leader in terms of custom and traditions of that particular community. The 40% is elected democratically by the community. So what we're trying to clarify is that both these components, their terms of office run for 5 years, because currently in the Act it's not very clear whether they are both, you know, their terms of office run for 5 years or not. So we're just trying to clarify that in the bill. The other issue, I think, which is the last issue, Chairperson, in these amendments, is that currently there is no provision for the remuneration of members of traditional councils. And this has presented a huge problem throughout the country in terms of the work of these traditional councils. Some provinces have even, you know, initiated a process to pay traditional councils without any legal provision for that, because of the pressures that they are getting from traditional councils. Some of these traditional councils have even sort of like died a natural death because, you know, people, you know, when they go to meetings, when they do the work of traditional councils, they don't even get any out-of-pocket expenses being paid back to them. So we're making a provision here to say they can be remunerated through a normal process where the Commission will make recommendations to the President and the President will then make a determination for the payment of the members of traditional councils. But a distinction that we are making, Chair, is that the only members who may be paid in a traditional council are those members who are not receiving any other salary elsewhere, because some of these members will already be traditional leaders, so they are receiving a stipend or a salary as traditional leaders. I mean, a senior traditional leader himself or inkosi will already be receiving a salary. A headman will already be receiving a salary. So why pay him also a sitting allowance at a very local level in a traditional council? So the only members that we propose should be paid in terms of the bill are those members who are not traditional leaders, who are not receiving any salary elsewhere. So that is the only condition with regard to this. Chair, that concludes the presentation on the amendments to the Framework Act on Traditional Leadership. But Chair, I just wanted also to add just one or two things on the first presentation that we made through Prof. To say that the bill is actually not an amendment to the current legislation. It basically repeals the current legislation and replaces it with a whole new act which is comprehensive, which is fully aligned with the white paper, as it was indicated. The other issue that I think we did mention is the issue that in that bill on the National House of Traditional Leaders, there's a long preamble, I think you might have seen it, there's a long preamble that basically captures the whole history of where we come from with the establishment of the National House of Traditional Leaders for the first time in terms of, you know, the provisions in the interim constitution and the national legislation that was passed subsequent to the interim constitution. So it was felt that it was necessary to capture that particular history in the current bill so that we don't lose that rich history in terms of where we come from with traditional leadership. Chair, that is basically what I thought we needed to highlight in the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any additions? If none, I think then we must allow the leadership on my right and opposite me, directly opposite me, to engage with this bill. Of course, one of the things that I think we have to get an idea of are the financial implications. There you are very broad about them, which is not helpful in Parliament. Parliament, one of its responsibilities is to look at the financial implications of any bill, and the bill has to be costed. Means we know exactly what we're talking about. So that we don't pass something that is not going to be able to be effective because there are no resources. And I'm saying that area is something that I hope that my leadership on my left will be able to talk to and respond to. Well, the floor is with the members now. We've got the two bills. They are interlinked. We have got a lot of Valingos. Valingos, Ozolani Labare, Folo, and Mr. Mack, in that order, number one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I must admit that the presentations have been clear, and the document on which they are placed assists us a lot. Now I've got a few questions. The professor said something about provision for provinces that have got no traditional houses. I may have missed what he said that provision is, because I assume that he meant that in one way or another, they are represented in this house. The second one to the professor is, would it be the president who initiates or propose that certain members of the National House of Traditional Leaders be full-time or is it vice versa? Because normally in the provinces, it will be the provincial house of traditional leaders that approaches the premier with a recommendation that additional members, I think in their executive committee, that they must be full-time. The third one to the second bill, the criteria for the recognition of a kingship and queenship is, it says in the bill, it must be a senior leader of a higher status than other senior leaders, traditional leaders. Under him or her, that is the second criteria, there should be a group of senior traditional authorities or traditional leaders that historically, that senior leader must have been recognized as a king. I may be trespassing because we have just said the Nhlapo Commission is finalizing its report, but there are already kings that are concerned and who are sick now, because they know that they are being excluded as kings, or their recognition is being withdrawn. Now, I'm looking at this criteria, whether trespassing again, whether they are not in conflict with what those kings think is going to be covered in the report, or they have had access to the report. I think they have had access to the report. And when you look at this criteria, you will find that they are inconsistent with the reason for that perceived withdrawal of recognition. Lastly, you have spoken about members of traditional councils having to be paid if they are not employed elsewhere or they are not getting the remuneration elsewhere. Now, as of now, the bulk of the work of traditional leaders or traditional authorities is done by what is referred to as sub-headmen, who are not of royal blood. How will this be cured? Because there have been complaints that we are doing most of the work. Well, it's a full soldier work. We are doing most of the work of the traditional authority or administrative area, but we are not paid a cent. We have got to go and witness in town, but there's nothing that comes our way. I don't know whether that is provided for. Thank you.
Well, Prof, I think you know that on the second latter part of Valimos is that, you know, they, as you know, that they are pondos. Therefore, they are claimed kingship has been withdrawn of Ndamases and in favor of Kaugeni, which is a reality. He's concerned about that. That his state has been taken away. He is no longer living under the kingship there. But I hope, Professor, you know this, you'll respond.
In that order. Thank you, Chairperson. yeah, Chairperson. Maybe I should announce that I'm from the Western Cape. So as far as I know, and the broad people in the Western Cape, different as in other provinces where they are respected and recognized traditional leaders. We have a problem with that in the Western Cape. The thing with us will be is how will we really identify these leaders if there is now people that proclaim they are leaders of Khoi and leaders of Sun. What is the criteria? And even you will have fights between them for recognition. As far as myself, I was labeled a Cape colored, a Cape, and a water colored, and everything in apartheid. So the whole thing of establishment of kingships and all of that is going to be a problem in this province. How do we really recognize these people, identify them? And then afterwards, how do you put them into a house? How do you establish that? And if we look, if there's going to be costing chair and we look at the remuneration, the other VAs, that many of these self-proclaimed people will now jump up. And I think we've seen some of it already happen. that will be, as far as kingships and that. My other clarity that I need is on sub-councils. That might have an influence on the Western Cape. If you have people or groups of people migrating from the Eastern Cape to Khayelitsha, and they're from a certain traditional group, which you can identify with a traditional leader in the Eastern Cape. So will we now have to establish a sub-council for them in Khayelitsha, Lugaletu, or in Manenberg, or wherever they stay? Or will that be bound to an area of the traditional leader, or can it be now anywhere? Because that is not clear. Because we might have a group of people belonging to a traditional leader that have migrated to the Western Cape, from the Eastern Cape especially, and they want representation, and they will need the representation. Will it be in that sub-council, and what? How will that work? Thank you very much.
Traditional leadership council in Khayelitsha. Yeah, that one is a good one. Eh? Very interesting.
Very
because
very
they can identify themselves. How come here?
Now, Chairperson, just to take it from where the Honorable Mac left it, you know, in the Northwest, you have a community in Kayakulu and Rampampaspoor. And the other community is an area called Moshana, next to Moshana, just in the borderline of Botswana. Those people are the Xhosa people. And there is a very serious struggle among themselves as to who should be their headman or their chief. They are refusing to recognize other certain chiefs approved by a certain section of the community, because they say, no, for that person to be recognized as a chief, that person must first get the authority from the Eastern Cape to be recognized. So how do you deal with that? I just thought I must take it where he left. But the other point, Chairperson, thank you very much, is what you really raised. It's a very important question about the financial implication. Agreeing that this is a very good piece of legislation to ensure that we streamline the system and, as you say, align. But it comes with expenses. Look, you're introducing sub-structures. You're introducing the bodies like your body of your chairpersonship and all those things. Obviously, they have financial implications. So the question is the how do you, are you able to implement this thing based on that? Otherwise, the question raised by the chairperson is very important. I'm just adding to that. That's the first one. That's the second one, chairperson. The third one, chairperson, you know, your annual report is also a very important initiative to be covered by this.
our experience those who come from the rural areas, chiefs, is that there is also some revenues collected by the traditional leaders. They collect revenues. And those revenues ends there. They are not covered in terms of the running, in terms of your annual report that is supposed to be presented to the legislature or parliament by the. Have you taken that into account? Because once you talk about paying the substructures and all these things must be taken into account. They must be regulated. Has that been taken into account? It will help because also it will minimize unnecessary frictions, tensions within the communities because these things are actually creating a lot of problems at that level because they are not accounted for by those traditional I am very impressed by the role that this traditional institution will play as far as your socio-economic development programs are concerned. One challenge that is always there is the lack of role clarity, which brings conflicts between these structures and the democratically elected institution, council, the councillors and the municipalities. I just want to check if, because I know that having passed this legislation, one thing that you will have to do again is come up with regulations that also will assist to clarify. If indeed the traditional leaders themselves, because I believe they've participated to a certain extent in the draft. Have they understood this thing? Have they been able to properly conceptualize and understood that this thing is intended to? If that is not the case, are we going to embark on a campaign to ensure that we clarify those things so we minimize conflict at that level? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Well, I think the other thing right, that these people are supposed to be saying, the one of Kofa Tisset, who are in the Northwest. I think maybe they require that the traditional leader to recognize their leader. Sonsora Ekutabi. Otherwise, they can't be led by a person who has not undergone that process. I think yes, we're raising that. I think these issues are quite fundamental even this thing of finance. Because if you look at it, the other bill, a governance, it says, no, there are no financial implications. But if you look at it, you are saying a traditional a kinship council and kingship council, the members must be paid. I'm telling you, it means they must build by national fiscal. The implications to that, which I think we must discuss as an honorable member, are that you have ward committees. Yeah? You have ward committees. Now, these people live in the same community. Now, if a ward committee is not paid by the national fiscal, and you have a traditional council, kingship council, and all the councils paid by the national fiscal, and it goes to what you are talking about, the class conflict. It's been about the role and responsibilities and quite a lot of things. And they'll say, no, we are the foot soldiers, even ourselves, in terms of this development issues and so on. It's something really that I think we must apply our minds and think it through. But I think a person who is an embodiment of the two value systems, the two value systems, Uchifu Khoshimgwena, will engage on this question. Speak to it. Because it's an embodiment of the two. You ask what we are going on. Emre.
Oh, but I'm not.
There is a cover and then. The cover and then the sort of piece of things must come in.
Thank you. Chairperson, thanks very much for the opportunity and for the briefing that was clear. The straight to the question, Chairperson. The let me go to the representation in the National House, where it is proposed that in the case where in an area it is only a headman, the bill specifically says it is restricted to traditional leaders, okay? But there might be a condition for a headman to be part of the National House or the House. I want us straight away to say, let's forget about it. Let's remove that thing. It won't work. It won't even work. Don't even attempt to put headman there, because you are now diluting the value of this institution. Because there are meetings where we will say it is strictly for traditional leaders. Even currently, as we speak, there are meetings that are called by provinces where when we're there, they will simply say, okay, now it's for everybody. Where we are with our traditional councils and our headmen. But there are times where we said, no, strictly traditional leaders. Not even your rep, who is that, regarded in the community as your rep or whatever. So this one, it won't even take off. In other meetings, yes, but for this person to be appointed or elected to serve in the National House, even the Provincial House, you can't do that. That one is a no-no. Let's just forget about it. When it comes to the formal part, we'll formally propose that what must happen, because that thing, it won't even take off. They remain our headmen, and we love them so much. Powers and duties, Chair. And our service delivered. We appreciate all this, but we'll add some more powers and duties. I think this is a framework. We'll add more. Maybe on slide numbers, on the same slide, under powers and duties. Maybe on bullet number 6, maybe a minor correction there. Instead of effect, where to affect, that affects the minor correction that I've just observed there on a quick glance. Let's go to the relationship between the National House and kings and queens, Chair. We're going to raise some issues here, Chair, because it is proposed that the National House must annually they must go and
whilst we are still lemon at this biannual, I was debating with my colleague about this thing. Is it once in 2 years? Is it once twice in a year? The biannual. What does it mean?
Twice a year.
Yeah, that must be looked at. If it will be accepted as such, that must be looked at. But my take on this one, Chair, is there any reason why are we saying the National House must annually quarter or whatever brief the queens and kings? Are we now saying queens and kings are not traditional leaders? Because the only differing status were all traditional leaders. Now, when you start to piece this thing together, say, you know, they must brief queens and kings only. What about the rest of traditional leaders? Who is briefing them? Are we saying now only queens and kings, they deserve to get the briefings about some activities of the house, but not ordinary traditional leaders? They are causing a division that they might not be able to repair. This loss, I'll be happy if we'll come with a right phrasing to say they must quarterly or annual or whatever you're going to decide brief traditional leaders, including kings and queens. They're part of us. We're having meetings with them. Unless those who, you know, if you want to build this relationship that we are talking about, that's going to happen. I'm saying this as a senior traditional leader in my area, who I'm having more than 100 and something sub-chiefs under me. I can't claim to get a briefing on my own. I'm part of all the sub-chiefs and some those junior chiefs in the area. If I was selfish, I was going to be happy about this law to say, oh, hey, it's only me and some of, yes, who's going to be briefed. But I don't want that. I belong to the collective. The National House must come and brief all of us there. Traditional leaders. That's nice. We can just decide how can they brief us, you know, in terms of district or whatever. But the briefing must be done to all traditional leaders, Chair. Now, there is this. Our comrades or colleagues from KZN will come to our rescue here. Status of members. Chairperson deputy to be full time. I know there's a big debate in KwaZulu-Natal about this full time status. In terms of in terms of the provincial house. Provincial house, I don't think there's a problem. You know, if we could just get a feel of, you know, if something has been done about this, because I know that, you know, Chairperson, there's a big issue about this, a full-time issue and whatever. I'm not saying anything, but if you can just be briefed. I know what Honorable Ntuli will assist, because Umpemba is one of the people from the royal family. I think you will assist us. My last one, Chair, I've got other things, but let me just not take everything and just go to the last one. Qualification and disqualification of members. In our culture, Chair, there is no way you can disqualify a traditional leader. Let me put this to people who don't know our tradition and culture. Even if a traditional leader in a particular area is mentally deranged, sorry for the use this term, English is not even my third language. If he's mentally disturbed or mentally deranged or he's just a moron, in that particular tribe, that person is regarded as a traditional leader. Okay? Now, we're going deep now. Maybe then let me leave it. Maybe let me leave it, because only when we'll be debating it formally, I'll try to just look at how this thing is done in our culture. But I agree in terms of dissolving a house, whatever, but this qualification, let's look for another 10, Chair. Chair, on the second round, I'll talk about the privileges, the relationship with the traditional councils, how they are elected, because there are many challenges. I think OPROF knows this council was elected a few months ago in our province down in Mpumalanga. There are many challenges. Because, for example, you get in an area where there were more than 80 voting stations, but when we elect traditional councils, they put only 7 voting stations, saying people who are living 50 km from that voting station must go and vote there. Now, to some people, it was as if they want this council to fail. Because in an area where, during normal elections, you are having 8 voting stations, they are reduced into 7. And at the same time, the department don't even make provisions for transport to take people to go to this voting station that's 80 kilometers away from them. What do you call that? It happened in our area. I think we're going to talk about this just to see how can we better or facilitate this so that it's get the same treatment. If we're saying, in the spirit of saying we want to try and improve, recognize this institution, let it go with all arrangements that are there to show that really we respect this institution. I'll come to some things, Chairperson, but for now, let me just stop here and sorry for taking much of your time. Thanks, Chairperson.
I think we hear across that this body is going to make a lot of amendments, fundamental amendments. And I must tell you, you know, when we do this, it pains the department as much as it pains the National Assembly when we make this amendment. They feel the pain. You know, as if they expect that we just sit here and say, hallelujah, go, we agree. It doesn't happen like that, and it's not going to happen like that.
You can hear now the few comments that you've had with the there's going to be an overhaul. Yeah, there she's even to go. Some bits. Yeah, that's the person. I wanted to check when we are talking about the remuneration. Let's say, as we are saying, that the chairperson and the deputy chairperson is going to be the full time. If you say it's going to be full time, you mean they are no longer going to do other work at tribe level where a person is an inkosi. Now let's say he's a full time in this, so it means that he or she relinquishes the work at tribe level. I just wanted to check that. Secondly, you are talking about the queens and kings. I'm not sure whether you said kings or you mean that there is a queen's house and the king's house, or whether you say it can be kings or queens. If you can clarify that. And I wanted to, if we take the Valoi tribe example, where you've got a new inkosi, not sure whether you call a queen or inkosi, let's say we say it's inkosi. Now if you say they are kings and queens, where does she fall? She falls in the kings or in the queens. And I want to check this one off. Let's say as he has won the case, let's say she has been in the house, maybe national house or what, does that disqualify her? Because like the one who was the inkosi when he has not won, now she has won, it means then the person who has been there maybe in the has to relinquish that because he's no longer is he no longer a king or a inkosi. And lastly is to check these people who are acting, let's say like Hoshi as is here, somebody is acting in his place, that does he qualify that person to be elected in this traditional house, provincial house? Let's say I'm a rep. My inkosi is somewhere in parliament, but I'm a rep here. Do I qualify to be elected in this to be in this house? Thanks.
Linked to that in terms is that the acting person, is that person qualifying to be paid? Because you find that Django goes baloli. Shulubane. Then she Ushulubane Ula here in parliament. There's an acting person there. In terms of the law, it says you can't get two salaries. So what it means in essence. What it means in essence, can't get two salaries. Now, Ushulubane is acting. I'm saying the other person is acting on her behalf. We are told the salary is paid. Then, is the person who's acting going to be paid for acting? Because what it means in essence is that the salary is only one person, two salaries. Ngoba lo ya acting it on your behalf. What does the law say to that? I think that's what is being raised. But
thank you, Chairperson. Ngicabanga ukuthi umphemba ngoba uhleli la eKapa
uzokwazi ukuunderstand umbuzo bobuzwe.
Inhlonishwa inkosi uMkhwenyi kule ndaba yokuthi sithini kulo daba olunohlevane elithinta ukuba full time nokungabi full time kwa-chairperson no-deputy chairperson we-provincial house. Lot has been said and lot has happened with regards to that, which clearly indicated ukuthi kwi-province it's a matter that needs to be attended to and treated in ngendlela enobuchwepheshe nobuchule ngoba inepotential yokususela uchuku unnecessarily. I doubt if we will be in a position to explain that thina nenkosi uMadlala, but safe to say it is a matter that both the executive and the current house, provincial house, are dealing with, and we hope that they will be able to, in one way or the other, resolve it. But I would also want to join my comrades who spoke before me to say to thank the officials, Prof, and your team for the clear presentation you've just made. I think it was quite very clear. And I must say, sitting here, it for me, it has covered a number of concerns that we have been picking up since the coming into effect of these two pieces of legislation. In particular, the framework, the traditional leadership and governance framework amendment, a bill as it applied in the provinces. that relates to issues of remuneration of traditional council members. Since the coming into effect of our own provincial legislation, each time we sit, this has always been an issue. Each time we go out to meet with the local houses, this becomes an issue too. We also have amakhosi sitting in our portfolio committee. Whatever political party they represent, at some point they forget that they represent either the ANC, the IFP, or whatever, and speak as amakhosi and on behalf of their people in the portfolio committee. So much so that we always have to remind them to say, no, but here you do not represent those structures. You see, you represent your political parties. Don't come with issues here and say, as amakhosi, because we do not necessarily take it as that. You either say as the ANC or as the IFP. But the major issue that I think also becomes an issue that needs to be discussed is the issue that in relation to the remuneration, because we, as in the province, we're a portfolio committee responsible for local government and traditional affairs. So that I will agree with the Honorable Shitega, the chairperson, to say we also need to look at what then do we say about the ward committees, because they exist and operate at the same level. Are we not setting these people against each other? But addressing the issue of remuneration of traditional council members, for me, is an important issue on its own. And the provision for sub-traditional councils has always been an issue, and I think we will welcome that in the amendment. I have two questions for both bills that I'm seeking clarity on. With regards to the National House of Traditional Leaders, the bill that is before us, clause 5 says something about qualification for membership of the house. Now, in provinces, we have provincial houses. This, I know, refers to the National House, but it has to have a relationship with the provincial and local houses to a certain extent. Now, provincial and local houses exist through the provincial pieces of legislation, traditional leadership, provincial traditional leadership and governance act, for instance. The provincial houses exist and the local houses exist through those pieces pieces of legislation in provinces. Is it envisaged that they should also be in a way aligned or amended so that they also will be able to deal with the qualification of people here, which I think is a new clause that has not been there in the old legislation, to say no person is eligible to become a member of the House if that person is a member of a municipal council, a member of a provincial legislature, or a member of parliament. Currently, you have members of provincial houses who are members of parliament. You have members of local houses who are members of provincial legislatures. I think Umkhosi Madlala is a member of local and provincial house. Now, is it envisaged that we should, at provincial level, make amendments to our own pieces of legislation so that there is uniformity? We align those with the provision, in particular clause 5, as at the PSA. And in relation to the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Bill, the amendment, goes. There is something about, I think it appeared in slide 17, the extension of reconstitution, extension period with regards to the reconstitution of traditional authorities from the 1-2 years that we had to 5 years with retrospective effect. It's my understanding that when this legislation was passed at the provincial level, all traditional authorities had to rush into reconstituting, establishing traditional councils and so on. And as far as I can recall in the visit, Umadlala, all have reconstituted. Amanye amakhosi are saying we will do it because we are being threatened, kicking and screaming and so on, because we are told that if we do not do it, we will be in trouble. We will be in trouble. Now, what I want to get clarity on is that if we say with retrospective effect, this 5-year extension, does it say it give relief to those that they feel that they reconstituted in a hurry and could not do a proper job, to say we now can go back? Let me just go to the slide and read what it says so that I get clarified. It says in brackets, the community authorities to be administered as if old order legislation has not been repealed. Does it say they will consider whatever they would have done after we have passed the provincial pieces of legislation as not having been done and can start afresh now and reconstitute themselves in their own pace? What does this mean? If it says community authorities to be administered as if old order legislation has not been repealed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you. Honourable members and Babu Sobash and members of his staff, I believe some of my colleagues have covered on some of the issues that I was going to raise, like the issue of conditional representation by headmen. One of my colleagues has touched on that to say even that conditional representation. I was having a question as to how long does it go, that conditional, because it means this person can be a member of the National House, he can even climb on the ladder and eventually become a chairperson. And he will be leading, or he or she will be leading the senior traditional leaders. And that there will be always that resistance of being led by that particular person. So I was having a concern on that, Jefferson and honorable members. And another issue was that of creating or the establishment of a body of chairpersons of provincial houses. But nothing was said about establishing a body or a provincial house to be in close consultation with the local houses. In other words, to form a body between the provincial house and the local houses. Likewise to that of a national house. Another issue, Chairperson, was on the issue of disqualification, as this type of legislation is also barring MPs, MPLs, and members serving in council to participate in kingship or queenship councils, as it does bar even those who are MPs, MPLs, to serve in houses. It can be National House, the Provincial House. And I wonder, why are we doing that? Why don't we look at the skills that these people are having, the information that they are imparting when they are serving on those structures? Another issue was that of making amakhosi or traditional leaders ex officio and serve as chairpersons in their traditional council. I wish to commend you on that, because I know of one of the areas in KwaZulu-Natal where a call was made. Then at that particular traditional council, the council sat and they elected just a person, not inkosi, because by that time it was not clear as to whether inkosi can become the chairperson, and they elected an ordinary person instead of an inkosi. So with this one, chairperson, I must commend the department and your committee on that. And the issue of remuneration, with that one, I must also commend you. But to say we still have a challenge, because there are areas where you find that they have more than 50 izinduna, and you are only going to pay only for those who are serving in traditional councils. And the other izinduna who are not on TCs will keep on mourning and lodging complaints against their inkosi. In other words, it's going to cause division amongst the izinduna of that particular inkosi. Another issue one of our colleagues was raised, the issue whether amakhosi did understand this piece of legislation. Like us in KwaZulu, we were just alone when this was discussed. No officials to assist us, to brief us. We don't know even of the contributions that were made, that were correct or whatever. So I would support that whenever such pieces of legislation are out, that we go out and assist the houses or the provincial houses. My colleague Katide has touched on this issue about debate with regard to the chairperson and the deputy chairperson in KwaZulu.
I believe, Khatid, you responded to it as a very shrewd type of parliamentarian, because that issue really, it's an issue that needs to be handled in a very constructive and care manner, because if we cannot handle it in a constructive manner, it will always be causing unnecessary tension in KwaZulu as it keeps on suffering further. So on that chairperson, I must thank the opportunity that you have given me. Thank you.
Mama,
thank you, Chairperson. Kodwa inkosi seyithethe konke. Ngiyabonga, Chairperson. My I'm from Mpumalanga, actually. My concern is that concerning this formulation, we've got headmen, we've got ward councillor, ward committees, and we've got CDW. The two are going to get paid, the CDW and the headman. What about the ward committees? And the headman, for instance, in my constituency, I've got more than five traditional leaders surrounding me. And when it goes to these councillors, they are more than 100 because of the traditional leaders surrounding me. And at the same time, when people go there to look for a place, they are paying money to the headman, to the traditional leader. Where is that money going to? Is it not going to be easier for the traditional leader to take the money to the house of traditional and submit that money so that this money can pay this ward committees and this other donors? Because really, these other ones who are not going to be paid working, it's unfair for them. And these people are surrounding my constituency, all of them, and others will be getting paid and others they won't get paid. And why is the money going straight to the traditional leader instead of going to one office where that money is going to be kept, so that it must go to the house of traditional leader? It's a concern, Chairperson.
Yeah, bonga, ma'am. You know, the other thing that, you know, being in Nigeria, but Makhetho Mongameli lapha, the president elected, or a premier comes in, prime minister, a premier, yeah, in the state. The business people come, they to come and greet, you know, the leader that is coming. And when they greet, they leave something. In millions and millions. They are saying if you are a president, within a week you are rich. Made for life. If you are a prime minister, a month, people come and greet your mate. Now, you find that those are more of our values. Value systems. As Africans. That when you a person come and see you, particularly as a leader, they need something. You know, I was talking to Kombe Tokyo Swale. He went to the funeral of the daughter of Umdwa. When he was there, he was saying that he was literally giving quotes. Umduana was very happy that he came and so on, therefore gave him goods. Then he had Alpha, obviously not a goal, even for his list. Now, I'm saying then, if you look at it, initial Mamanyan, people, when they come and leave something as a form of thanking you for doing this. Now, in a European way, that is corruption. Europe, corruption. Definitely, yes. In an African way, no, the way things are done.
We are born, food in your bong. Nobody compels you to do so. Food in your bong, we share something. Now, I think, Prof, you, as a learned friend, you are supposed to reconcile the two, Europe and Africa, in relation to the federal system, particularly on this system.
Chairperson, the way you are putting it otherwise. It's not like that.
No,
it's compulsory.
No, I'm coming to that. I'm coming to that. Original element, that's one part. The second part that is raised by Manyana is that when I come to look for a site, Kutomang is a bodler. Yeah. No wound, no wound, you know. It's a requirement. Boxing window. Now, when a code of conduct like on a Skype food, the code of conduct. In that game, how do you deal with that? Because what Manyana is saying is that if these people, the leadership at that level is paid, not even salary. There is no need of this. If you get this thing, you must hand it over to the structure for it to be utilized by the collective than yourself. Now, I'm saying then, if you look at those, something that I think must be defined by yourselves as you go along.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I also want to appreciate your extension of an invite to the Gauteng legislature, because indeed it's important for us as legislators to kind of understand, you know, the passage of the bill, because in most instances we are expected to engage with a bill at a very tail end, you know, part of the passage. But my questions, some of the issues that have been raised, I just want to reiterate, because I would want an explanation on some of the questions and comments from the department. My first question, Chair, arises from slide number 5, which speaks to special provisions being made where there is no traditional house. I would really want to know what kind of special provision has been made, because this particular slide speaks to our situation in Gauteng. In Gauteng, we inherited two traditional leaders as a result of the integration of part of the west, northwest into Gauteng, including part of the Bronkhorstspruit area into Gauteng. So we basically have two traditional leaders, but we do not have a traditional house. So one would want to understand what type of provision is in place for Gauteng. The second issue is based on slide number 6, which speaks to the role of the traditional house in as far as, you know, its mandate is regarding it being an advisory role in making recommendations to government relating to policy and legislation, customary law, partnership with government and development and service delivery programs geared towards development of rural communities. I do really appreciate, you know, this input or rather amendment or what, however we may describe it. But one would really want to understand the extent to which this house may advise, you know, the extent to which this house, you know, will be positioned in a manner that is of an advisory role to government, and what type of dispute mechanisms have been put into place in the event that there is, you know, different approaches by the House of Traditional Leaders and government to interpretation and implementation of policy. I do agree that it is important that they be consulted, but if we extend their role to be that of an advisory,
structure to government relating to policy, legislation, customary law, and partnerships with government in development and service delivery. What type of dispute mechanism has been put into place to ensure that both parties at least move on the same path? The other question is based on slide number 9, where we say that the minister, with approval of the House, may appoint a secretary. I would want to understand the role of the secretary. Is the secretary assuming the role of an accounting officer, or will the secretary assume the role of a responsible officer? Because is the secretary only responsible for the performance of secretarial duties, or will he or she assume the role of an accounting officer? Because if you read slide number 9, at the end it says that the responsibility of the House is to assign clear responsibilities to the House, to the Secretary of the House, hold the Secretary responsible for overall performance and administration of the House. So I would want to understand the role of the Secretary. You know, role clarification is very important. Is he the accounting officer or just a responsible person? Thank you.
As we are encountering, you must know that your status might be changed by this law. That you might find that in all the hostels, there are indunas, a lot of them. They will establish a sub-traditional custom in that area. But at the same time, you go to informal settlements. All of people from all the walks of life, they'll have their own traditional sub-customs there in those informal settlements. They're a community and want to have a leader. Therefore, Gauteng might be required to change its way of thinking.
Chairperson, good morning, and good morning, colleagues and traditional leaders and staff. Chair, thank you very much for the invitation and also for the words of welcome. My apologies for being delayed a little bit. Chair, coming to the legislation, we appreciate very much the whole question of the sub-councils, because it will address a lot of the geographic area problem that we have in our province. We, however, would like to guard against the whole question of inferiority again, and we should be sensitive there. Now, Chair, if I'm out of order now, please rule accordingly, but I'm begging for your indulgence. We are now busy in our province with establishing a traditional house, and we went to public hearings on the bill that we have passed. And at the public hearings, the communities of the Griquas and the Nama people were very concerned about participating in this house that we propose to establish. But they have a problem with the National Council of the Khaos Khoisan and the legislation thereof, which will not make it possible for them to participate in this house. Now, one of the concerns that we have is possible racial tension with the cross boundary question now, bringing in the traditional leadership from the northwest and then immediately establish a traditional house. Whereas these people are arguing they are there since 1999, wanted to have a traditional house and nothing happened. We are saying that this could create possible tension which we don't want and which we don't need, and we hope that these amendments here would also accommodate us and speak to this particular problem that we have. And therefore, I appreciate very much this opportunity to speak in this meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Now, you know, when there's nothing that can be out of order, Professor Sobatle is the custodian of these issues from inception. In fact, there's a view that there must be a department dealing with those matters. I can see his eyes are looking at that, that he must lead that department, you know, as a person who is there for the time. Now, I'm saying if you ask him, I'll respond to all questions. In fact, that's why there's no other person in the department who
college experience and everything else that goes with it than him. Therefore, if you talk to him about these questions that have been an issue to yourself in the province, he has to respond. He's a walking library, as you say. Dr. Van Nierde.
Thank you, Chairperson. Don't be surprised, Mac, but I'm also going to take part in this. Chairperson, from the Freedom Front point of view, of course, we have a great affinity for any form of traditionalism at the outset. But let me get back to particularly to the framework bill. The question that I have, a couple of questions, maybe some of the questions will be addressed when Jorge is going to explain how the traditional system actually works when we are going into deliberations. Be that as it may, in the amendment in the framework bill, Chairperson, it says there that applicable provincial legislation will determine the recognition of a people or community grouping together as a kingship or queenship. Now, my question in this regard is, do the people who made the presentation, do they envisage that there should be some sort of coordination or uniformity in these provincial legislation regarding the recognition of such communities? I'm from the Free State. Must the Free State provincial legislature, when they legislate then for the recognition of such a community, must their legislation, the provincial legislation, be in line, for instance, with the legislation in the KZN, maybe? I don't know. That's a question. Then, Chairperson, a second question is that as far as the source of income is concerned, do they expect that the source of income will come from the provincial fiscus or maybe from the national fiscus? And then I think it was already referred to by my colleague here from Gauteng. What is the position going to be if there's going to be a clash or conflict of interest between the traditional institution and a local institution? Is there some sort of mechanism who is going to settle such a dispute? And for this moment, thank you, Jefferson, that's all.
Thank you very much. Well, I think this is an opportunity, Dr. Van Nierde, that the Freedom Front can come with traditional communities now. And they are recognized. Because if you look at that, it says that there must not be more than 15 members if you want to establish sub-council residing in a particular area from a great place. It means when you look at maybe some area or run and say it's a great place, and other areas from that, then you start doing something. Mr. White, you'll follow.
Thank you, Chair, and I'd like to thank the professor and everybody for the inputs. It might surprise you, but I'm also a traditional leader, Chair, from the Free State to the Cheetah rugby supporters. So it's a very important tribe and supporters I have there. Chair, yes, I just want to echo the costing of this. It is quite feasible. I suppose one could put a costing onto the House of Traditional Leaders and its infrastructure. I'd also like to just know there's one certain king who's got 10 wives and they each live in a palace, and it could cost more than what this whole house would cost. I'd also like to know, is each province going to be responsible for the household costs of any traditional king or queen? Is it going to be capped, or is it unlimited that one king, for example, could have a budget of, let's say, 40 million and the other one only 5 million? I'd just like to know the costing of that, or where that money is going to be allocated to come from. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. West. Mr. LaRosa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can't claim to be a traditional leader, although it would be very nice this morning to know a little bit more about the structures. And I'd just like to say, sir, that I thought it was fascinating listening to everything this morning, and I certainly have learned a lot. Just one thing I'd like to know, dispute resolutions, has there thought been given how that is going to be handled in future? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. In areas of dispute, how do you handle them? I think all of us are there. They all want to say, let's allow the prof to respond. Oh, Mrena, right?
On the, it used to be the Chapo Commission. Now it's Commission. You're saying that the report has been finalized. In the context of business unusual, what are we talking about? Time frame. Thanks.
Well, the gentleman that came off Ntlapo is not popular. He's still called Ntlapo Commission, even if Ntlapo is gone. Prof.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, and members. With your permission, Honorable Chairperson, allow me to say this, that I have a team here, very qualified, who respectful, I'm asking to be allowed to also make a contribution in terms of fielding the questions that have been answered by honorable members. Mine will be to round off later on, but allow me, because we have differential expertise on this issue. And I would love to see them cutting their, we can call parliamentarities, in answering some of these questions. And with your permission, Chairperson, I respectfully ask you to allow my colleagues to field this question. Then I will come later. Thank you. Over to you, with your permission.
Thanks, Chair. I will take some of the questions, and not all of them, and I understand there have been quite a lot. One is overwhelmed also by the support that the members are showing, and the direction also on some of the issues raised. Chair, with your permission, I'll start from the bottom on the issues that you've just had now. Then we'll go to the first question. Okay, I will not attempt to answer the question about the Ntlapo Commission. I think the colleagues will take that. But the issue of dispute resolution, I think it's quite important, and we did not cover it here, with regard to any other issue that may arise in traditional communities with the structures that exist in our communities. But the issues that pertain particularly to the boundaries of traditional communities, the leadership positions, the existence or non-existence of the traditional communities as they are, those issues are dealt with currently by the Commission in terms of the new legislation. It's not in the bill, but in the original Act, which we are amending in certain respects, the issues of conflict resolution are covered. The Commission is dealing with that. Historically, before the Act was passed, I think provinces could appoint their commissions of inquiry to look at these issues. And these issues were resolved in that way. But currently, the Commission is looking at all the leadership disputes and community existence disputes, as I've indicated. The costing of the bills, Chair, I think maybe that's an omission on our part to actually come up with the actual costing as to the implementation of the bills. But if I may just indicate that the House of traditional leaders is already being supported by government. There are staff members appointed by government and seconded to the House. They've got buildings, they've got furniture, they've got vehicles, they've got anything and everything that will make them work. So the bill as it is now is not going to increase anything. Now, maybe in terms of functionality, if they want to function, it will, more effectively than they are right now. It will just be a matter of the normal escalation of the budget, but there will not be any major financial implications, brought about by this bill. I agree, Chairperson, with regard to the Framework Act, there will be new structures, the kingship or queenship councils, and I think that the members there will receive a sitting allowance, out-of-pocket expenses for the meetings that they'll be attending. However, there will not be many meetings for this particular council, for the kingships or the queenships. But I think that we will then be required to do that, to estimate the cost of implementing the two bills. And I think that we can do that, Chairperson, by If we are going to meet next time, I think we can already have done that for the two bills. And I think it's quite an important question. Chair, with regard to whether there will be provincial legislation to deal with the issue of kingships and kingship councils, Chair, if you look at the bills as they are with regard to the to those issues, we don't envisage provincial legislation to also deal with the issue of kingships or queenships and their councils. However, the premier will be required to recognize the councils and to administer the work. If you remember, in the framework act as it is right now, the president is the one who recognizes a king or a queen as a person. But with regard to councils, I mean, these are just practical issues on the ground, how the council is going to be operating, how many members, etc. That is going to be dealt with at provincial level. But the detail is already in the bill. So we don't envisage a situation where provinces will now have to pass their own provincial legislation dealing with the same issue. So that is how we've approached the issue. With regard to the discrepancies in budgets for kings, I would leave that question also for my colleagues to deal with. The issue of sub-councils, especially in the Northern Cape, and with regard to the Khoisan issues, Chair and members, I really agree with the contribution by the honourable member from the Northern Cape. But however, we are also dealing with the issue of coming up with a policy and legislation to govern the Khoisan matters, leadership matters, as well as their communities. In May this year, we met with our minister met with the National Khoisan Council, trying to speed up the issue of the finalization of the policy. We hope that by before the end of this year, we would have the policy, let me say, approved by Cabinet for publication so that we can now officially consult with all the stakeholders with regard to the Khoisan policy issues. And we are working closely with the National Khoisan Council. And all these concerns and all these issues are being addressed within the auspices of that process. And we hope that the product will be a product that everyone will be happy with in terms of, you know, addressing the issues of their communities and their leadership. Chairperson, the issue, I think it came from Gauteng, about the issue of the Secretary of the House, whether he is going to be an accounting officer or just a responsible official. Currently, these secretaries for the houses, the national house as well as provincial houses, they are called secretaries or CEOs of these houses. They are more like accounting officers, even though they don't necessarily control the finances, because these houses are attached to the department. But in terms of running the work of the house on a daily basis, the secretary is the responsible official, really, who administers everything, who manages everything for the house on a daily basis. But the actual controlling of finances, that is done with the help of the department. And I think that is the case with all the provinces, also with the provincial houses. But specifically with the national house, that is the arrangement. He basically runs the business of the house. Even the reports that come to Parliament every year, he's responsible for that. We don't even come into the picture as a department, because that is the business of the house, as a statutory body. So that's how they currently run their business. The extent of the advice that the house may give and the conflict resolution mechanism, I think the role being advisory, currently, I mean, really, it doesn't stop government from doing its business. If government consults the National House on any business, the House will make its comments, and government will continue doing its business. I'll make an example, for instance, with regard to the bills. these bills we're talking about here today were referred officially by the Portfolio Committee to the National House. It's a requirement. It has to happen. The House made its comments, and the comments were considered. Surely not all the comments were actually effected, but most of them were considered quite closely, and the mechanism was found to capture those comments into the bills. So with regard to any other programs that government is undertaking, the House may be consulted from now and again, but they make their contribution, but it doesn't mean that if government cannot agree with the House on the approach, then government cannot continue doing the work. We've seen, for instance, in situations where there's some disagreement, we've seen the House meeting with the minister, we've seen the House meeting with the president also, to try to clarify and agree on certain issues. I think that's how, you know, conflict resolution has been handled up to so far. But I agree with regard to this particular issue, the bill does not handle the issue of conflict resolution. It doesn't deal with it. The issue of the special provision for provinces without houses, particularly, I think the only province with traditional leaders and no house of traditional leaders is Gauteng. And there are only two traditional leaders there. And the bill provides for those two traditional leaders to automatically become members of the National House because there are only two. At the time when we started, Northern Cape did not have a house of traditional leaders. But during the process, they established the house, as the Honorable Member has indicated, and they've elected three members to go to the National House. So the two traditional leaders from Gauteng will automatically go to the National House. The issue of the receipt of gifts by traditional leaders, I think the Code of Conduct deals with that. Any gifts that are received must be declared. But I think the mechanism has not really been clarified, but it is there. But I also agree to say, you know, the chapter indicated, you know, the culture that exists in our communities, how people do things. I think it's there. But the provision in the law, trying to harmonize between the Western way of doing things and the African way, is to say that gifts must be declared. The revenue that is generated by traditional councils, where is it going? I think the legislation provides for the administration or the management of finances in a proper way. So the department, because our department in provinces as well as the national department is responsible for the finances of traditional councils, they must put in place mechanisms whereby revenue collected can be, you know, deposited in a certain fund, which I think there are trust accounts in provinces, and those must be accounted for in terms of how they've been spent. And I agree also that the annual report of TCs must reflect all the revenue collected, all the money that came in, and how it has been spent every year. Chair, I won't really deal with the issue of the ward committees, the payment vis-a-vis the issue of the payment of members of the TCs. I think it's one problem that just needs to be dealt with. I will not really speak on behalf of the other units at DPLG who deal with ward committees, but I've heard that issue is being looked at in terms of how do you then deal with the issue of the remuneration of ward committees. But I'm not really sure about how far that issue has gone. Chair, the issue of traditional leaders understanding the legislation, I think it's a big issue that we are seized with at national level to say how do we ensure that our traditional leaders understand, not just legislation directly impacting on traditional leaders and administered by DPLG and our sister provincial departments, but all the laws that impact one way or the other on traditional leadership, which is why we are initiating a process right now that is going to culminate in national workshops where traditional leaders will be taken through all these pieces of legislation that impact on traditional leadership. It will be legislation administered by DPLG, other departments, provinces, just the whole package, Chairperson. But with regard to these particular bills, we went to provinces and we met with all the houses of traditional leaders, and we took them through the bills and what they provide for. There were numerous comments made, and those comments were carefully considered, and they were included in the final product as we have it today. The issue of the remuneration of traditional leaders and the remuneration of headmen, I think this is a particular issue that Nkosi Madlala was referring to, which occurs in KwaZulu-Natal. I'll leave that for the colleagues also to deal with. The issue of disqualification of kings in councils, the issue of disqualification that I think members referred to. If you look at the Framework Act as it is right now, the disqualifications are already there as to who can continue to be a traditional leader and who cannot continue to be a traditional leader. If you look at Section 15 around the issue of when a deputy can be appointed, I think it points to the fact that you cannot continue if, for instance, you become a member of the municipal council, a member of a provincial legislature, a member of the National Assembly. That is already there in the legislation. That's when deputies are now appointed by traditional leaders to continue with the business at home. So that is the very same provision that we copied from the Act with regard to traditional councils, and we put it with regard to kingship councils as well as with regard to the National House. It's already an established sort of principle in the legislation to say, when this happens, then a traditional leader must have a deputy for his community. Chairperson, the issue of headmen in provincial houses and the National House. Chair, we envisage that the new principles that will be in the new legislation governing the National House will also have to cascade down to provinces. From what we've heard from traditional leaders, as it was indicated by Nkosi Madlala and Nkosi Mgwena, to say there's a problem around the issue of headmen participating in houses. We are looking at a situation whereby provinces will also have to provide the same in their provincial legislation around how these issues are handled, so that because we need to have this national uniformity around how we handle things. So definitely, with regard to the two bills, there will be a need for provinces now to also amend their provincial legislation to be in line with the national legislation. The national legislation on the National House is not necessarily a framework act, but I think, for issues of cooperative governance and uniformity, etc., provinces will have to follow suit. But with regard to the amendments to the Framework Act, that is clearly a framework act. I think there's an obligation on provinces to follow suit and amend their provincial legislation to be in line with the Framework Act. Chair, the issue of the extension of the period to reconstitute traditional authorities to be traditional councils, whether it applies to community authorities. yes, it applies to community authorities. If you remember, there are two entities. They were traditional authorities, and they were given 1 year within which to be reconstituted. Now, community authorities were given 2 years within which to be disestablished. They had to be disestablished completely. And then the commission is dealing with their issue as to what, if you have been a community authority, in terms of the new legislation, there's no community authority. What then do you become? So the five-year extension also applies to community authorities. But the question that we had was to say, while the community authorities are there, how do you then administer them? Because the new act says there will be no community authorities. So that is why, legally speaking, we said they should continue to be administered as if the legislation that established them is still in place, so that you don't have this legal vacuum that nearly got created here. And also, I think there was an issue around whether all provinces were able, you know, to reconstitute their councils. Chair, like I indicated, most provinces were not able to constitute their traditional councils because they had to have their provincial legislation, they had to come up with regulations, they had to come up with programs to reconstitute their traditional councils. As we speak right now, without necessarily saying who has done what, the provinces, for instance, of the Eastern Cape, they are halfway through the process. I know Mpumalanga has started, as Nkosi was referring to. Limpopo has not even started with the process, but I know they are planning towards it. Other provinces have done it, you know, not without problems, but they've done it, trying to be within, you know, the issue of the implementation of the legislation. So because there were these problems, then we thought we need some extra time to finalize the process. The other question was whether we're talking about kings and queens or queens or kings or queens, the clarity around this issue. Chair, we are talking about a queen that is being referred to in the legislation is a queen who occupies a position of a queen, like a king, that position. It's not a queen who is a wife to the king. I think sometimes we have that confusion. The queen we are referring to here is where, in a particular community, a position of kingship, if I may put it like that, is occupied by a female human being. So that is a queen. So that is what we are referring to here, not wives of kings. So it's clear, it's kings or queens. That is what we are referring to. And the position of the Baloyi traditional leadership there is that of a senior traditional leader, uyihosi, that level, not the kingship or queenship level. You will remember there are three levels that are recognized in legislation: kingship or queenship, senior traditional leadership, and headmanship. So the Baloyi are in the middle. All right, the issue of the remuneration of a deputy and chair of the National House, whether they still do their work back home. I mean, they are full-time in the National House, which means that they spend all their time at national level. So what they should be doing, I don't know, I cannot confirm whether they've done it, is to have deputies in their communities. People will be able to do their work in the communities. So that should be the position currently, because they are full-time at the National House level. Chair, I will not comment much about how the elections for traditional councils are handled. I think it's an issue, like Nkosi was referring to say it really has to be discussed and a solution will have to be found, how we do this properly. The other issue that was discussed was the status of members, and I think clarity was needed from KZN, and that did come through. The other issue was the relationship between the king and the house. Why do we have this particular clause? There was a long discussion around this issue. And there were, I think, two or three suggestions as to how you could deal with it. The first issue was to say the kings must be members of the National House through an election process, just like any other traditional leader. And I think the feeling was to say that how kings are treated in most communities is unlike, you know, the other level of traditional leaders. You accord them this respect that they deserve as kings of their communities. So you can't then subject them to the election processes and all these, you know, debates that might happen in the houses and the voting and all those things. So rather, create a structure for them to enable them to deal with matters that affect them at that level and then relate with the house. But then we ended up saying, rather than having a formal structure to say this is a structure for kings, just create a mechanism for the king to relate with the National House instead of having a structure that will be created as a structure for king. So that is how we have, that is why we have the provision here as it is, to say only a relationship, to have some meetings between the National House and king and queen. Okay, the issue of headmen, I think, has been addressed. I think some of the questions, Chairperson, it's a matter of noting, and some of them were comments that I don't think we really need to answer to. I think the last issue, Chair, that I will deal with is the issue of the sub-councils and the issue of migration of people from their areas to the urban areas. I think it's an issue that has been there from the time the issue of migrant labor started. And there was a way it was dealt with in terms of how people then represented their kings in the hostels, in the townships, whatever the situation was. But that did not necessarily mean that there were communities there. If you look at the clause, the way we have crafted it here, it does not envisage a situation whereby if I come from my community back in KZN and I come and settle in Soweto, then I can claim, because there are people also who come from my area, then I can claim to be a community there. The idea here is that if historically this community exists in two or three different geographical areas and all these people owe allegiance to that one senior traditional leader or that one king, that's how they become, you know, a community even where they are. Now, there must be a history behind that for this community to be recognized as a traditional community. They must qualify in terms of whether they subscribe to a system of traditional leadership, that they have a history of being a community, a traditional community, and all those things. So how we envisaged this particular clause is really not to apply to the people in hostels and the people in the townships, because that I think is a separate issue. If we have to deal with it, I think we'll have to just confront it as an issue. But this particular clause is not meant for that particular situation. There are specific situations, for instance, in the Northern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Northwest, where this one community geographically exists in different locations. That is what we are dealing with here, not the migrant labor system where people establish themselves elsewhere. So I think that is one other issue that I thought is important to comment on. I think the issues of the Koi Fund, which were raised earlier on by the honourable member, I think was the same one as raised by the other member. Chair, I think the other questions really, I think the colleagues will deal with them. I think I've had a mouthful on this one. Colleagues, I'll leave them to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, Nati has gone through the whole list. I really couldn't even stay with ticking off all the questions he dealt with. In the main, I think he has covered all of the questions. There are only one or two areas where I thought maybe I can just add for clarity purposes, and that's with regard to the Koi Fund. I think one needs to understand that the Framework Act does not apply, and also the amendments now does not apply to the Khoisan community. As Nati has indicated, there is a separate process to deal with the Khoisan issue. There is a discussion document that's been finalized that will soon be submitted, maybe within a month, to Cabinet to get approval to consult with all stakeholders with regard to that. That will inform whether we have to amend, again, the Framework Act to cater for Khoisan communities, or whether we will come up with a separate piece of legislation to deal with the Khoisan community. So the emphasis is just that current legislation, Framework Act, and so on, does not apply to the Khoisan. There is a separate process that will
that will come up and that will cater for Khoisan communities. There was also a question, I think, regarding whether the issue of the different positions traditional leaders can be in. For instance, a fully fledged position, an active position, a deputy leader, or a regent. I think when it comes to the deputies, it must be clear that whenever a deputy is appointed, he is not remunerated by government then. There is no remuneration for that person. It is an arrangement that will happen between the traditional leader, who is a member of parliament or whatever structure, between him and the deputy, they will arrange. There's no official remuneration from government side for that. All other positions, whether you are an acting person or a regent, if you occupy that position, you qualify to be elected in all of these houses and other structures, because you occupy a traditional leadership position. You don't need to be a fully fledged traditional leader to qualify. If you are an acting person, you qualify. If you are a regent, you qualify to be in all of these positions. Chairperson, in the main, I think the question around the Chapo Commission, I think Prof will be able to deal with that one. I don't have anything else to add. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, any other member wants to
ask? Thank you, Chairperson. As I said earlier, I'm just running off. Indeed, Chairperson, with your permission, my colleagues have fielded the questions, and I hope to your satisfaction, to the satisfaction of the honorable members as well. But just to touch on a few issues that were raised. For instance, the issue of the so-called Chapo Commission. That commission was never really officially known as Chapo Commission. It was a commission, the resolution of disputes and claims with traditional leaders. But because it was chaired by Professor Chapo, and it was easier to refer to it and avoid the long name, is what is referred as Chapo Commission. Secondly, with the new acting chairperson, Professor Muleleki, as head of that commission, as chairperson of the commission, I think the commission officially informed us and the public at large that they want to do away with being referred to as the Chapo Commission, but to resort to the full name of the commission dealing with disputes and claims at the moment. Secondly, my colleague touched on the issue of the Secretary of the House. Allow me to say that these issues are being investigated. The members, some of the members will know that around this issue there is a bit of, or there's a considerable discussion here with some provincial houses desiring to be autonomous, etc. And allow me to say this position, this situation is being investigated by the department. And I think more clarity would be brought to bear on this issue of exactly what role is being played by the secretary. Because although officially it can be referred to as the Secretary of the House, in some instances it's referred to as the CEO. And we know that there is a difference between the CEO in terms of the power that the CEO has and the secretary. But as we say, this position, all these issues, the autonomy of the House or provincial houses are being investigated at the moment in order to bring clarity and for the government to take a definite stand on these issues. Members must remember that on the issue of the institution, a lot of issues are evolving, and new challenges come up, and the government has to respond. That's not that we are dealing with a static entity. As challenges come up and the institution, the implementation of legislation is being affected, bringing up challenges and new issues coming up, the government, together with the civil society, has to respond to that. And today we may not have a definite stand, but in future we'll have a definite stand because the issues are evolving. With respect, for instance, to the issue of that was touched upon by one of the honourable members, the payment of levies. The white paper is very clear on that. With the advent and introduction of Framework Act, traditional leaders must refrain from getting additional levies from people. But we can see then that provinces have not been able to adhere to that properly, because we continue to receive complaints from civil society in the provinces that they are made to pay these levies that the honourable member talked about. And we are taking steps to respond to that, because as much as is humanly possible, there has to be uniformity in these things, and there has to be accountability on these issues. Who initiates the extension of full-time membership? Honourable member from Eastern Cape mentioned that. Although we say with respect to the National House, these issues must be, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule here. As long as it is known then that these issues, national for instance, with respect to the National House, the discussion must take place between the President and the National House, members of the National House, so that they present their views as to the reason why there has to be an extension of full-time membership to other members of the House. The same will apply, I think, in the provinces, that there has to be, whoever initiates it, it can be initiated by the Premier in the provinces, as long as the discussion must take place between the Premier and the provincial houses, and that both entities are satisfied that there is a need for this. The other issue, the restriction of membership to headmen. My leader there from Mpumalanga was very, very adamant on this. And we understand that. But let us say here from the official point of view that this issue has been very contentious. We never, as government, initiated it. It was initiated elsewhere. That this restriction, they must be restricted to the senior traditional leaders, membership to the National House, and provincial must be restricted to senior traditional leaders. There was a counter to that, a counter which is similar to the argument presented by the Honorable Ngosi, to say, Ngosi was saying, for instance, why restrict, why take out people who are members of parliament, municipalities, and provincial, why exclude them? Because they bring in expertise, which we are listening to. But at the same time, the same argument was used to say, headmen, also some headmen have necessary expertise that could be utilized. We're not saying this, I'm not saying this as a counter to what you're saying, sir. But I am presenting here a motivation as to why we said that. I'm giving you the motivation as to why this appeared. That there was that feeling then that headmen also would bring to bear their expertise, and hence they have to. But as I say, we are listening to what you are saying. Lastly, with your permission, Chairperson,
argument here presented by honorable members to the effect that sub-headmen have to be paid because they are the foot soldiers, groundwork. And this is a challenge at the moment to government because, as my colleagues have said, only three categories are being recognized and were negotiated by government during the exhaustive consultation process when the Framework Act was being crafted. That kingships, kings, senators, senators, and headmen. And the fourth category that comes up and again was never considered. And I say, without any commitment from government, that this is evolving. Here, as my colleagues have correctly stated, we don't cater for anything other than the categories, the three categories that are recognized by government. But these issues are evolving. And as time goes on, they would need a revisitation. The same applies to the last issue, the migration, as my colleagues have said. But we see this issue, especially in the Western Cape, the migration of communities from elsewhere, and already we have been engaged by communities from here to look at that. And again, the government has not taken a stand, but we are engaging this issue, and it's an evolving issue, it's a new issue that is coming up that needs to be attended to. And as I say, with your permission, the government is still at an initial stage engaging these communities that are here. Although we must know that the migration has always been there, the migration of communities has always been there, and it will continue to be there. And the government needs to respond to that as new challenges spring up as a result of that. And we are already beginning to grapple with this issue with respect to the Western Cape, the migration of people here who want to be recognized. If I may just say that, Chairperson, the other day we were called here this year to a meeting in Cape Town to meet some of these people. When we came in, the room was full, and everybody, I think there were about more than 50 people, and as they were being introduced to us, each person said, "I'm Chief So-and-so, Chief So-and-so," and there were no counselors, they were from a party, everybody was a chief, and we didn't know where they came from, and that's a challenge with respect. Thank you very much, sir.
Well,
seems Mr. Smith want to come back. In fact, I want to close the discussion because at one we must be through here. This was the beginning of a discussion. It's a process that is evolving. But let me allow the two hands of our visitors, Mr. Smith and Bana Baba, cut it.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I will be so short. let me first of all say we appreciate the answers that DPLG has given regarding the communities of the Griquas and the Nama people. But it doesn't help us, Chairperson, because it seems as if processes is overtaking us. And therefore, I plead with you as Chairperson of this committee, please take this matter further at the highest level to assist us, because at home, the MEC is going on with the process of starting the traditionals. Thank you.
Now, we appreciate that valuable call, that the intervention must be done. And that's what we like. We do that very well when we're required. I also appreciate the responses. They clarified us even further from Prof. Nitim. But there is one thing in Kabanguta I tend to look at, Unati Angzang and Msuguti, Utin Gasengayo, whilst I thought the implication is what I was saying. I think Begis and Uti, with the legislature,
KwaZulu-Natal lo baba uthi kusomlomo bapha beyindaba somlomo lubukhosi ihlalo zamhlophe nje nithebangezi namhlanje lo baba is a member of the legislature uyinkosi from KwaHlabisa ekhaya emumva KwaHlabisa une deputy traditional leader futhi unomuntu ombambele but he's chairperson of the local house with district yakho uThungulu because there is nothing he's also a member of the provincial house because there is nothing in the current legislation the KwaZulu-Natal Traditional Leadership and Governance Act that bars him and any other inkosi from becoming a member of a local or a provincial house on the basis that he's an elected member of a provincial legislature. So that's why I was asking in relation to the National House of Traditional Leaders Bill, that does it mean or is the implication now that when we go back to provinces, we'll have to amend our existing legislation, the KwaZulu-Natal Traditional Leadership and Governance Act, so that it is in line with this. It says that Ndabezitha is no longer allowed to be a member of the local house or the provincial house. Is that the implication? That's what I just wanted to get, because as we go back, we'll have to look at that and see if we are able to align it. Thank you.
This is a difficult one because already the subject of a dispute in KZN. But what I was referring to, Chair, is for instance, Section 15 of the Framework Act as it is right now. No, not the bill, but the original act. It says when a traditional leader begins to participate in a municipal council, that is through an election, not even participating in meetings via Section 81 of the Structures Act. When a traditional leader is elected in a municipal council, that traditional leader, for the duration of his membership of a council, he is, strictly speaking, not a traditional leader. He becomes a politician to sit in a municipal council. Similarly, when he is elected to the provincial legislature, he ceases to be a traditional leader for the duration. He becomes a member of the provincial legislature. Similarly, with the National Assembly. So this implies, therefore, that there must be a deputy back home, and the deputy is, for all intents and purposes, a traditional leader who must now perform all the functions of a traditional leader. So I think the implications are very, very clear. It's already here in the legislation passed in 2003. But how this is implemented, I think maybe it may be subject to many interpretations and arguments, how people then implement this at home. But I think the Act is very, very clear to say that you can't continue being a traditional leader when you are now elected into these structures, as I've indicated. So as to what the province needs to do, really, I think it's up to the province to deal with the issue, as I think the province is already dealing with the issue. I can't offer any advice. It's a contentious issue, as I think you will understand. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think what is, you can't have a WTP. That's what it means in essence. I think that it is all unless we don't want to hear it. Well, I'm going to share what I'm going to do. Possible. But I think we're in a number of us, it's important that, because I know that these provincial bills were submitted to you to check whether are they in line with the national framework. It means then you must also pay attention with that eye also of ensuring that these things are in line, you know, there's no deviation. And what the nation wants
must be reflected in the provincial law in terms of further consistency in the approach. But at the same time, Gibaba Katide, I think the official their responsibility is to motivate why they have arrived at a parallel determination. Then the ball becomes in the court of legislators to legislate. The executive is also clearly, to be honest, in terms of when they pass the second cabinet by letter, it becomes our responsibility. What we require for them is technical expertise and to check here and there, but at the end of the day, we are the people who must take decisions on those matters. And which sometimes people, they tend to want the department to be continuously being a player in these cases, which is not right, because there's a separation of powers in terms of the Westminster Doctrine that the legislators are assumed to deal in this matter. Now, I think that's how we must take it, and we must take it that the power is with ourselves to do what we want to do in dealing with the law. But I want to raise one question before we maybe wrap up, Prof. What is urgent about this law? Because I must tell you now, the traditional leaders are lobbying very strongly for the amendment of the Constitution. They've raised the debate again in relation to their powers and functions. And also, therefore, subsequent to that, to the legislation. Which means then that they still want, in the main, more power. I think you'll recall the debate has been going on for some time. As to whether they'll get that or not, it's a mute question. But to me, I'm saying we're having this limited time, because when I was looking at the program of the committee, it's very, very tight. Extremely tight, that it will make us even next week when we go to the Free State to continue with the meeting on this bill so that we can engage on the process. Now, I'm saying in checking then with that discussion and so on, or should we follow the approach that we are taking, Prof, of saying the process is evolving? Therefore, if it evolves, you continuously amend, respond to challenges. The question is that at what point are you going to stop? Because the law and the constitution must not be tampered with easily. It means when you come with these things, you must be very clear. I mean, it doesn't mean that you can change, but you must ensure that people's respect is not changed at a wink of an eye. It becomes a challenge to change the law. Now I'm saying, how do we approach this? Because as I sit here, I'm thinking about that maybe probably we must consult even ourselves with other people who are engaging on this matter before we're able to say, to finalize the committee. Prof, over to you, sir.
Again, let me allow members to take a bite, then I will come later. Not, I can do that. And they can...
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of the agency, to finalize the bill now. I think if you look at the issues that we raised in the bill, let me start by the traditional leadership and governance framework amendment bill. If you look at the issue of the extension of the period within which the transformation must happen, for us, we think that you cannot continue to have the situation as it is right now. You have entities there whose legal position is doubtful because they were not able to do what they were supposed to do within the one-year period. So their legal position is doubtful. They continue doing things, taking decisions while they are illegal. So we are saying this is the time, as a matter of urgency, we need to sort that out. So that is the first reason why that bill is urgent. The other issue, Chairperson, is the issue of the recognition of kingships or queenships. The issue, as we have explained it,
is that currently the Act provides for the recognition of individuals, that is a king or a queen. Let me create a scenario, Chairperson. Let us say tomorrow the Commission says the community of Kwampungose is a kingship. What will the President use? What legal mechanism will the President use to recognize that community as a kingship? Because in law right now, there is no mechanism. He can recognize a person as a king, but not the community. It will be required of a king to perform certain functions in terms of the law and in terms of custom. But there will be no council to work with the king because he is recognized as an individual. So that is also very, very urgent. The commission is towards now finalizing its work. People will be declared to be kings. Communities will be declared to be kingships or queenships. But there is no mechanism now to deal with this. So that is another area where we think it's very, very urgent that these bills be finalized, this particular bill on the amendments be finalized. The other issue which I referred to is the issue of the payment of members of traditional councils. As I indicated, many of these councils are collapsing because of the very same reason that they are not being remunerated. They use their money to go to meetings. When they get to meetings, there are no refreshments. They can't even get their out-of-pocket expenses. So that is the other issue. We cannot, for me personally, as a country, we cannot set up a structure and then let it to fail. And I think that has happened. As a result, the province of Northwest, for instance, started paying members of traditional councils without any legal provision allowing them to do that because of the pressure that they were feeling to say these structures are collapsing because people are not being paid. And I think because they transferred a community to Gauteng, Gauteng had to inherit that. Northern Cape had to inherit that as well. So you can see the problem that we are already facing with regard to this. So therefore, it is very, very urgent that we finalize that issue through this process. The other issue is the issue that we referred to, the issue of where Paramount Chief, as in terms of the old legislation, passes away, what happens. There is no legal mechanism to deal with that. A king in the Eastern Cape passed away. Nobody has been recognized because there is no legal tool to do that. Similarly, in Mpumalanga. So that is also another urgent issue that needs to be addressed through an amendment. With regard to the National House Bill, Chairperson, I think the very, very first issue that we identified was to say, can you continue having a structure that is really not aligned with the new thinking, the new vision of government about traditional leadership? At this present day and age, the legislation that established the House still refers to the interim constitution. A lot has happened after that, and they have not been aligned with the new constitution since 1996. And so many years later, more than 10 years later, that has not happened. So we said, when we start the process, that must also be done. We need to align these structures so that there's efficient functioning of these structures at all levels. So you need to make sure that the National House is aligned with the Constitution and also the white paper that was adopted in 2003 on traditional leadership. There's also a need. If you remember, Chairperson, we've been referring to the alignment of terms. There's also a need now so that we can align the term of the National House with the terms of other provincial houses and all the other structures, even the traditional councils. So once the legislation comes into effect, that will then happen. Because right now, you find that the Northwest Provincial House will have their term ending this year. KwaZulu-Natal 2 years later, while maybe the Eastern Cape it was 3 years later. You know, there is no alignment. Therefore, it's very, very difficult for the National House currently to function efficiently. Because at any time, you will have members being replaced. So there's no continuity, there's no alignment in terms of how it functions. So the other agency is to also ensure, therefore, that the House functions effectively. I mean, if you look at the House currently, how effective it is, you will find that it can perform much, much better with the new legislation than how it is performing right now. And I think that's a general agreement across the board. Even the House itself, they were pushing for these things to happen. So Chairperson, in a nutshell, that is why we believe that it's urgent for these bills to be finalized as a matter of urgency. I don't know, the colleagues may add also.
Professor, is there anything that you want to ask?
Yeah, you know, it's very true what she has said. We have tangible examples, Honorable Chairperson. Three, the so-called Ntlampo Commission has made a determination disqualifying some erstwhile paramount chiefs. There is no mechanism to effect that decision. At the risk of anticipating what the commission may say, if a commission, on the other hand, may recognize a new community as kingship, there is no mechanism to do that. Thirdly, if, as has been alluded, we had a terrible situation where in two provinces, two paramount chiefs passed away. Provinces did not have a legislation to deal with kingship because that legislation has been taken away, augmented by Framework Act, which takes responsibility now to the president. So, but people had to be administered there. The royal family identified the successor. But there was no mechanism now to deal with that because we did not know whether this heir was a king, qualified to be a king or not. But there was no mechanism. Although the committees went forward and appointed the heir, who could, in terms of legislation, be an acting one until the commission has decided? That person was in a limbo because there was no mechanism. And that has happened since 2005, when one of the kings started passing away and was followed by the Mpumalanga. Lastly, Chairperson, as my colleague has said, it is so urgent in the sense that the National House, as it is now, has no control over what is happening in the provinces. We had a situation where, for instance, the term of office of some members from the provincial came to an end. And it created a huge problems for the National House and for government, because there was no alignment of these terms. And until, you know, you get this once and you feel when you are caught on the wrong foot, you feel that this must be done immediately. So we're trying to align these houses so that they smooth once bitten, twice sad. So there must be smooth administration of these entities, Chairperson. And so on those issues, without repeating what has been said already, there is an urgent need for these two bills to be passed. Otherwise, they run the risk of being challenged. As we said, some of them, these entities, should not have been there. For 1 year, they should have been, you know, transformed, but the reality on the ground, they have not been transformed. And they keep making decisions. It will take one person to challenge them. And once that challenge wins, it will undo all the work that the government has done. We are just holding our breath that that does not happen until these bills get through. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I think, of course, we'll look at the matter. And we hope that you are going to be with us, Prof, up until the end. Which we are looking at contemplating a possibility of meeting in the Free State, because we're going to Free State next week, where
we engage on these issues. I think the major concern that will be faced, that will be facing the parliamentarians in particular, and society in general, will be the issue of the alignment of these things, particularly the side of remuneration, the payment for all committees, and the traditional council. That is going to be a big thing, I must tell you now. And I think leadership and leadership is about anticipation in terms of what might happen, because if you look at there, it talks about out-of-pocket expenses. The bill that was just recently passed, I'm not sure if it has been signed or it has moved in the, this thing. That, and that is done by various local councils, by councils. Here, the president pronounces on the matter. The president pronounces on the matter. Now, you find that it's the same department that is doing this thing. Most of the same issues differently. But not only that, this thing passed in the same cabinet. I don't know how were they not seen. In the short space of time, that these things are going to cause a lot of consternation in the system. Because there's always a competition. If you go to the rural areas, there's a competition between traditional leadership and councillors. There's a contest between head people. Head people. I will not say head. Head people.
A new term.
And the ward committees. And the community development worker. Always the competition there. Now, if you find that they are governed by different systems, it is going to cause a problem. I'm telling you. And it's something that I think we must find a way of managing it as we engage on this bill, so that we don't cause more division in our people, within our people. We must look at uniting our people at all times. Our actions and our conduct must reflect unity and peace with, amongst our communities. Now, it's something that this team has to look at and begin to find a way of reconciling the two. But I think, Prof, you are sure that the bill, substantial amendments are going to be made. You have heard the comments.
Yes.
And I think you must brace yourself for that. As much as the intervention in the East, in the Northern Cape, that situation must be arrested, because one of the major things is to arrest divisions amongst our people. We must ensure to avoid that at all costs. Therefore, I would say that I want to thank everyone who has been here. Particularly, our thanks go to our special delegates from provinces. We hope that also yourself in your busy schedule will be with us through the process, so that you understand it. As much as thank the members of the committee for them for being here, the support staff, of course, very important. I saw today that they are highly multi-skilled. They were already preparing food, which is supposed they went to fetch the food. And they came with it here. Then they're preparing it, which really you can see that we produced the best of the best. This is supposed to be done by other people, but they've taken over. I think because they saw some challenges that were there. And also thank the department led by the Prof, in terms of your insight, contribution. And let's hope that, as I said, that will be with each other throughout up until this process is finalized. We would want to meet your expectations at all times. I think we'll inform you as we go along. Thank you very much, colleagues. What is more important then, as I said, that tomorrow we're meeting also again on the issue of the side of the other cluster, security and constitutional affairs. At the same time, next week we're going to Monday to the Free State to be there. We hope then that the leader of the cheetahs or the support of the cheetahs will be able to show us the way that side. Thank you very much. You must enjoy the lunch that is being prepared. Well, we're told, Prof, that in Parliament the sitting down has been barred. I still have to check the logic behind that. That no, we must no longer
eat sitting down. We must stand all the time when we eat. Now, maybe it's for health reasons. You know, there's wellness program. That must do that. You must enjoy the food there. Thank you very much.